Welcome to the Retail Transformation Show with me, Oliver Banks. This is your weekly podcast, delivering you the insight, ideas, and inspiration to successfully change and transform in our ever-evolving world of retail. Enjoy listening. Out of all of the various categories and formats of retail, the traditional department store has perhaps been the most impacted, the most disrupted. And in turn, we've seen a huge number of negative stories, unfortunately. However, the department store format remains close to consumers' hearts. And in this episode, we're diving into the trials and tribulations and opportunities facing department stores right now. Welcome to the Retail Transformation Show. I'm your host, Oliver Banks. I'm a retail transformation specialist, a consultant and advisor, and author of the best-selling book, Driving Retail Transformation: How to Navigate Disruption and Change. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This one is episode 286, number 286. And as I was just saying, we're diving into department stores today, a fascinating topic. And to help us do that, I'm really excited to be joined by Neil Saunders, the Managing Director of Global Data's Retail Division. And in this role, Neil oversees all of Global Data's retail propositions and research, and works with companies to help understand the landscape around retail, consumer, and the broader market, with a view of developing and evolving ideal business strategies. Neil was consulting director at research firm Verdict, and prior to that, Neil also used to work for the John Lewis Partnership, where he was involved in a number of different topics, but interestingly around store locations and the evolution of the e-commerce business there. He's been the non-exec board director at Great Western Railways. He's been an advisory board member for the Faculty of Business and Law at the University of Southampton, and is a visiting fellow at the University of Surrey as well. Alongside Neil, I'm proud to be one of Rethink Retail's top retail experts, and we're also both top voices for retail over on LinkedIn too. So Neil absolutely knows his stuff, and this is a fascinating conversation. So I do hope you enjoy it. You can find out more about Neil over on the show notes page at obandco.uk/286. That's obandco.uk/286. You'll find out more about Neil. There's more podcast episodes to check out. And of course, you can sign up for my retail transformation briefing to help keep your finger firmly on the pulse of the ever-evolving world of retail. So without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with Neil Saunders. Here we go. Well, I am delighted to welcome Neil Saunders onto the show. Neil, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Ollie. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited about our conversation. I think we could get into so many fantastic topics. Well, I know we will get into so many fantastic topics. And it's a topic that captures a lot of people's attentions, right? The topic of department stores, which have been a centerpiece in retail forever, basically. At least since Harry Selfridge probably really grew the model. In recent years, we've seen department stores retracting from being the sort of the classic anchor in malls and shopping centres. We've seen a number of department stores go into administration or become online-only brands. And it seems to be a quite a common pattern that the department store companies are struggling. And question is, the business model struggling as well? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think you're quite right. When you see and think about difficulties in retail, department stores always come up. And there's been a lot of distress in that market, hasn't there?
Yes.
And, you know, as you rightly said, some of these are iconic names. They've been around forever. And suddenly names like Debenhams, House of Fraser, they just disappear. And that's quite shocking for people because they've been a fixture on many high streets for a very long time. But of course, the model, I think, is a very difficult one to operate, because when you think about a department store, most of them are huge compared to normal sort of specialist stores on a high street. And that's really expensive. You know, it's expensive for the real estate. It's expensive for the building. But the overheads are expensive as well. Mm. So if you get something wrong or something shifts in the economics of running that business, it can have a really damaging effect on sales. And I think that's what we've seen. We've seen a lot of the kind of economics of running a department store unravel for some of these chains. And it's very, very punishing on that type of business. And it's almost like the, you know, the dinosaurs are the old dinosaurs of the high street, and they didn't quite adapt. Mm. The economic model shifts, and suddenly some of them become extinct.
It's interesting what you say about store size, because, you know, again, given that they are staples of our physical shopping locations often, and the store size, they're big, enormous, and therefore often quite old stores, and a refit for a big department store, goodness knows what that would cost, right? But it's going to be pretty pricey, and even just the amount of disruption that would cause to the local customer base, to say we're either going to have rolling refit plans for the store for years, or we're going to have to close the store completely for a certain period of time and have massive building works. It's, you know, it's a major complexity, actually, when you start to really consider that.
It really is. And I think, you know, some of these businesses, it's interesting because some of these businesses have grown over time. And I think they've sort of had one building on a high street, and then they may have acquired some others and sort of merged them together to create this big store. And I remember John Lewis, as it was in Cambridge, which used to be called Robert Sale when they used to have separate brands. I think it was something ridiculous. Like, they had something like 40 different levels in the store. Wow. And obviously they're not 40 different stores. It's not a skyscraper, but they just had these kind of little steps leading up. And you think about that, it's really difficult to work with that kind of space. And to refurbish it, basically you'd have to rip the whole thing apart and put it back together again. And that can be really expensive. And as to your point, Ollie, the refurbishment of any department store is expensive because you've got such a huge area. You've got so many different things that you need to improve within that space. It's not just like giving a relatively small store in a mall a refurbishment. This is a major undertaking in terms of finance and in terms of the logistics as well. I mean, I remember as well, John Lewis Oxford Street, when that was refurbished, I think they actually had to take the roof off to drop in new escalators. I mean, this is the kind of scale of the problem of dealing with these huge spaces and huge stores. It's just not simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And some quite interesting engineering challenges there for the team as well, I'm sure. As we think about overall financial performance for department stores as a model, obviously profit lines are challenged. The cost lines, as you point out, are challenged. What are your thoughts on revenue and demand? Are they performing there, or are they struggling there as well?
Well, I think that's the problem. I think the demand side is where there've been a lot of issues and problems. I think if a lot of these chains were continually growing sales, they could probably manage the finances relatively easily. But a lot of them have not been growing sales. And I think the general trend for those that have been in distress is that sales have declined. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think the first thing is that our shopping patterns have changed. We as consumers don't necessarily go to department stores to buy all the things that we used to. Because when you think about it, a lot of these stores grew up in an era before online. They grew up in an era before out-of-town shopping really developed in a serious way. So we couldn't just go to the supermarket and pick up all the different things that we wanted in non-food, as well as doing a food shop. So in a way, some of these new developments, or relatively new developments in the sort of longevity of the department store span, they have taken away trade. More of us buy things online than we used to. More of us go out of town and do the shopping at the grocery store and buy the non-food. So this has pulled, I think, some of the trade away from the department stores. I think the other thing that's interesting as well that intersects with that, and especially in the US, although it's happened, I think, in other markets, including the UK to a degree, the locations where we shop have changed. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the US department store landscape, most of the department stores are in malls. But the truth is, a lot of those malls themselves are underperforming because we've got newer and better places to shop, including some of the lifestyle and out of center malls, the open air malls. These are where people prefer to shop now. And the department stores haven't always got a representation there. So there's definitely been all of these challenges on the demand side, just because shopping has shifted, essentially. And it's not really been in the department store's favor.
Yeah, I think particularly the growth of e-commerce has just been enormous, right? I remember as a child, we had a big department store in our town. And, you know, you would go there and you would shop across the departments, right? And you'd fulfill multiple shopping missions just in that one building. And now, you know, yes, we've got Amazon, which I believe is a department store with millions of departments, frankly. But also we've got every other store just at our fingertips, and you can go and do those same missions relatively easily. You know, that means that actually for a customer, why are you going to that big store that, by the way, isn't in the most convenient location, to your point about how shopping has moved? Parking access or travel access is not always the easiest. So I think it's almost a bit of a perfect storm against the department store in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I think it's really interesting because it's sometimes even those mundane things, isn't it? Like, I remember when I was young, if you kind of wanted to buy new shoelaces or something like that, I probably wouldn't buy them. My parents would buy them. But, you know, if you needed new shoelaces for your shoes, well, we'd go to John Lewis because they'd have the shoelaces. Nowadays, if I needed a new shoelace, well, I'd probably just get it on Amazon. So, you know, the department store's losing out on that footfall. But I think as well, I mean, online's definitely, as you say, it's played this very big role in shifting our shopping habits. But it's really interesting because I think online is a culprit of some of this, but I also don't think it's solely responsible, because we did an analysis of Macy's lost customers a while back. We looked at all the customers that stopped shopping at Macy's in the US and those that had cut down their spending at Macy's in the US. And we looked at where they defected to. And actually, Amazon was right down the batting order.
Wow, okay.
It wasn't anywhere near the top. A lot of the other physical spaces had taken share away from Macy's. So Target had taken some, for example. Some of the luxury brands that have opened their own stores, like Michael Kors or Coach, they'd taken away some of this share. And I think that gets onto a really important point. It doesn't apply to every department store, but I think it applies to a lot of them, especially in the US. I don't think the US is very good at doing department stores. I think the UK is somewhat better, and international markets are better than the US. But one of the problems is I think some department stores are committing suicide because they're really not helping themselves with things like in-store standards, product development, thinking about who the customer is, creating that point of differentiation that does get the customer in. I think a lot of department store thinking in many cases is very sloppy and just hasn't risen to these new challenges. And I think that is part and parcel of a package of problems, including online and other things, that has led to the demise. So in some ways, you can lay some of the blame, I think, at the door of some department stores because they're just not doing enough to adapt and to respond to what customers want. So it's that old classic thing of just not listening to the customer enough.
And to your point earlier, you know, being the dinosaur of the retail industry, essentially, and not moving on with the times, you know, in terms of being relevant to customers, recognizing, you know, as you say, the D2C movement that is taking so many brands and making them so much more accessible and being able to buy directly from the brand with exclusives and all that. And then we've got, of course, the growth of supermarkets expanding into plenty more categories that were never their traditional stomping ground. So, yeah, very fascinating. Neil, I'd like to come back to what you're saying about the international execution, I suppose, of department stores. Just expand on that, you know, thinking about what you've seen in the US, the UK, and across the world.
Yeah, well, I think it's starting with the US. I think the US generally, to be quite honest, is not good at department stores. There are one or two exceptions, but they're just not that good at department stores because they have too many of them. They're in locations that are declining. And I think a lot of the department stores are just not run very, very well at all. If you look at Macy's, for example, it's an iconic name, but actually shopkeeping standards are just appalling. They just don't have a grip on that business at all. You have some smaller players like Dillard's who are still pretty good and they're quite traditional in the way they run things, but they adhere to that kind of old-fashioned customer service and they do quite well as a result. But the US really has suffered, I'd say, much more than the UK in terms of department stores. I'd say the UK is somewhere in the middle. I think the UK has had a lot of issues. We've seen a lot of department stores disappear. The UK does luxury department stores. Obviously, most of them are in London, does them excellently. I mean, if you think of iconic department stores, you've got Harrods, you've got Harvey Nichols, you've got Selfridges. They're all up there with great department store execution. But they're kind of exceptional. You know, they're these one-off flagships. I know they have some other stores dotted around here and there, but they really are these big traditional beasts and they rely on tourist spend. They rely on people coming into London to get things. And they're just great emporiums in the old fashioned.
Yes. So they're not perhaps scalable in the way that, let's say, a Debenhams was a few years ago.
Exactly. So I think, you know, they're very much an exception rather than the rule. And then, of course, you have the kind of classic department store like John Lewis in the UK, which was pretty well run, I think, up until relatively recently and was doing pretty well, but now is starting to suffer and see some of these problems that are affecting other department stores. And obviously, you could do a whole episode on John Lewis and what's gone wrong and what needs to be put right. But that's a great shame to see because John Lewis is one of the department stores that traditionally has executed very well. And it's what I call a proper department store. And this is another thing I find fascinating. US stores like Macy's will say they're department stores. They're really not in the traditional sense of what a department store is. They're just massive clothing stores with a bit of home and a few other things bolted on, including beauty. If you go into a John Lewis, it's actually a proper department store. It has basically everything that you need under one roof. So you've got massive home, you've got furnishings, you've got toys, you've got haberdashery still, although they've shrunk that down a bit. You've got kitchenware. I mean, it is a proper department store, whereas a lot of the US stores really aren't. They're mostly clothing, and that's where most of their sales come from. So I think that's a really interesting distinction as well. And the difference between how different countries execute.
Yeah, that's interesting. And also in terms of what's going to pull a customer in, right? You know, to your point, going to a clothing store is one thing, but going to a clothing and home and furnishing and baby, et cetera, et cetera. Suddenly that, you know, that makes it a day out, right, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that comes to a really important point as well. I think, you know, department stores sell lots of things, but you have to have a real anchor there to draw people in. You have to be really specialist almost in something and really excel, even if it's just in one or two departments, because that's ultimately what pulls people in. I think what John Lewis used to excel in, I think it still does to some extent, is home. It wasn't really about fashion at John Lewis. It was a brilliant home store with a lot of other things that you might want to buy. So, you know, people would go there for kitchenware, for new wine glasses. They'd go there if they needed a refrigerator or something. It was really that kind of home element that anchored John Lewis and pulled people in. They might go and look at apparel and other things whilst they were in there, but it was just brilliant at home. And I think that's very difficult if you're just in apparel or you're just in one or two other categories. You've got to kind of have a hero category that I think really draws people in. And then you can hang other things off of that. And I think a lot of department stores don't realize that. They're kind of a mishmash of stuff and the stuff is all right, but it's not a place where you go, I'll travel 50 miles to get there. You need to have that hero. And I think a lot of them have lost that.
That's really such an interesting point there, Neil, in terms of having that sort of hero speciality, because in the world of more and more e-commerce marketplaces coming on board, the danger is that actually some of these relatively specialist retailers suddenly become essentially a department store with a million different categories, and you lose that heroic core, I suppose. And actually, that could be a real recipe for disaster if we go down that route for many different companies. So interesting watch out for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd like to pivot a little bit because, as we were saying, department stores have been capturing attention across the industry and across the media for many years now. And we've seen a number of new models coming out. We've had Beta, we've had the likes of Showfields, Situ Live in London, which are essentially, I would view them as types of department stores, in as much as you've got lots of different products, you've got some of that specialist knowledge that you can bring in as well. But we've seen all of these different models falling by the wayside. What are your thoughts on these? Are these still valid? Was it a genuine attempt at the department store model of the present day? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, Ollie, isn't it? Because we kind of talk about, oh, we need to reinvent department stores. And a lot of these concepts came out. And I think at the time, a lot of people said, oh, you know, this could be a new model for department stores, you know, showcasing these D2C products being places of experience. I think there was great excitement. Unfortunately, a lot of them have fallen by the wayside, and some of them have disappeared completely. And I think one of the problems is that, I think there were two problems, really. I think some of them tried to be too clever, like Situ Live and Beta. They were kind of showcases and educational hubs where you could find out about different products, and especially complex products like electronics and things like that. And in a way, it was really interesting as a concept, but to me, it was sometimes a bit like TV shopping in person. You know, those TV QVC where they will take a long time.
The infomercials.
Yes, basically explain all the features, and, you know, they hoover the floor with something to show how the vacuum works. And that's kind of what it was in person in some senses. And I just think it was very, very niche. And I don't think that many people really want to go and have that experience. Maybe if you're in the market for a new vacuum or new this or new that or new the other, you will do. But it just is a model that I think is just too niche. And I don't think it really captured the consumer's imaginations. I mean, people don't really wake up and go, oh, you know what? I must go to that store today because they've got demo of vacuum cleaners or demo of a washing machine. It's just, it's a bit odd. I don't think people sort of have it like that. The advantage of doing it on television with QVC, et cetera, is you'd have it on in the background and you'd be doing other stuff and something might capture imagination and you'd look up. So it kind of works on television. I think in person, where you have to make a dedicated trip, it's just a little bit too niche.
It's a great analogy, thinking of the TV shopping, right? Because you switch on the TV, you never quite know what you're going to get on QVC, right? It might be jewelry, it might be clothing, it might be trampolines, whatever. And the same is true of those models as well, right? You might need a Hoover and you might turn up there, but actually there's a car where the Hoovers were last week, because that's the rotation of stock and suppliers, etc. So yeah, very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what's the anchor point. And I don't think they really had a point of difference. And I think that also applies to the second category of stores, which were the kind of neighborhood goods, show fields, which were much more about finding unusual products, especially from the D2C space, trying to bring them together and provide a curated experience. I was quite excited about these. I think that they were interesting stores. I think the slight issue with them is that they were perhaps a little bit too niche. In other words, they weren't really mass market enough. And I think you might go into one now and again to see what's new. But because things, again, were constantly changing and you would have different sorts of products, it was a bit hit and miss. And I don't think people sort of, again, had that real reason to go there. They might do occasionally to say, oh, we'll see what's new. But if you had a particular purchase in mind, they weren't necessarily the first port of call because they didn't have that hero category. They were constantly changing. I think the other thing is just in the here and now is that obviously we've gone into an economic environment where people are a bit more constrained, where people are sort of cutting back a bit on discretionary goods. And stores like Neighborhood Goods and Schofields were very discretionary. So I think, unfortunately, they've kind of hit a bit of a buffer in terms of where the consumer is and how the consumer's shopping. So again, it's a great shame because they were very innovative, but they just didn't quite hit that mark.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So let's just think about how department stores can evolve, how they can transform, you know, learning from what's working well. You know, having a hero speciality or category is a big important message that we've already taken from the conversation. What other things are you seeing department stores doing a really good job of? And, you know, particularly thinking about elements like omnichannel, elements like customer focus and so on as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, there's one really good example, I think, of department store that's doing well and is really thinking very strategically about how it evolves. And it's Liverpool, the Mexican retail group that runs department stores. It has some other formats as well, but it has a lot of department stores in its mix. And what I'm always struck by when you talk to people at Liverpool or you look at their general strategy is they're really thinking about their place in the retail ecosystem. So as you've indicated, omnichannel is very important. We all know that. And they've got a very clear strategy to ensure that they are first on their customer's screen, which is very interesting because a lot of department stores think about, you know, the physical stores. But Liverpool have said, well, we want to be first on the screen. We want to really own the online space. And then we'll tie that back to our stores where we can fulfill products from stores. We can have people collect products from stores. So they're really thinking about where the customer is. The customer's becoming more digital, so they've got to become more digital as well. But then they'll tie that back to the stores. So I think that that's really interesting. But they haven't just left it at that. They then said, well, okay, well, we've got these stores. We're going to use them off omnichannel. But what else do we need to do to attract people in? So one of the big players they've got is something called VAS, value-added services. And this means looking beyond products to things that they can integrate into the store that people need to use. So it might be homeware in home furnishings design. They've added some beauty salons and beauty spas called BX, which is, I think, their own development, all these kind of services that you can't get digitally because you need to be there in person to do them. So they've had a look at that. And then they've done some really interesting things as well. Like they've got in some of the stores now, headphones that you can put on and things that you can scan products and you get like a virtual sales assistant that will advise you about these products, which, you know, is maybe it's a bit niche, but at least they're really thinking about how to evolve the model of the store, perhaps make it more digital, and at the same time, maybe cutting down on some costs. So I'm really excited when I look at Liverpool, because to me, they've got all these different thoughts and they're really thinking about their place in the modern retail ecosystem. And I think that's what all department stores need to do. You've got to think about all the different pieces, think about your customer and how you're relevant to them, and then really fashion a strategy around that. And I think a lot of stores, they just don't do that. They kind of evolve very gently, or we'll do a new private label line, or we'll close a few stores here, open a few new ones there. Actually, that's not deep enough. You've got to really rip up the rule book and think about how you respond to all of these challenges that we've discussed. And I think Liverpool is, more than a lot of other stores in the department store space, is really doing that.
It's such a great example, and lots of different tangible routes that, you know, you can see that they are pushing the boundary and inevitably learning along the way as well. You know, particularly going screen first, that will provide them with a ton of data, and even things like, you know, having the headphones, they will be collecting data around, well, what are customers interested in? Where are they asking for? And I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's not the time, given the challenges that we discussed right at the very start of the conversation, so many different challenges on basically every single front. And tweaking around the edges can't, by definition, can't tackle all of those challenges, right? So we do need to be thinking more expansively, more holistically. What is the role of the department store, our department store, in the modern day world? So fascinating example. And so many great golden nuggets, Neil. Thank you so much. This has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. How can people find out more? How can they get in touch? What would be best?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, great conversation, Ollie. I mean, we could go on and on, both of us, I know.
Definitely.
It's such an interesting area of retail. But yeah, if people would like to follow more, Twitter is one of the channels I post a lot of retail news and other things on. My handle is Neil Retail. LinkedIn as well. I'm on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with me. I post a lot of content on LinkedIn, probably a bit more in-depth than on Twitter. So you can follow me there as well. And yeah, if you want to learn more about what we do as a company, you can visit globaldata.com, which is the company that I work for, and look at the retail part of that and see what we do. So yeah, lots of ways to get in touch if people wish to do so.
Superb. And we'll put all of the links on the show notes page today for you to go and check out. And Neil, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast. Absolutely fantastic conversation. Tons of takeaways. I appreciate it enormously. Thank you.
Thank you, Ollie. It's been absolutely great. I've really enjoyed it.
I do hope you enjoyed that conversation there with Neil Saunders from Global Data. A fascinating conversation. Neil knows so much about department stores, as well as the wider retail market. And it really got me thinking to the concept from my book, Driving Retail Transformation, all around finding the right transformation appetite that suits the organization to the point we're talking about. We can't be tweaking around the edges if we need to transform in a much more fundamental way. And actually really understanding what is it we need to tackle? What's the challenge? How do we effectively reflect on our own performance, our own place in the market? It's such a crucial skill. And if we head on into our transformation journey and we've not effectively understood the challenges, the true challenges as we face as an organization, then in many ways, it's a bit of a recipe for disaster, unfortunately. So a fantastic conversation there with Neil Saunders. As he was saying right at the end, we could have gone on for ages. Such a knowledgeable guy. And I do heartily encourage you, go and follow him on social media, on Twitter/X, and of course on LinkedIn too. So I'll put the links to his social profiles and where you can find out more about Neil on the show notes page today at obandco.uk/286. Also on the show notes, I'm going to put some additional episodes of the podcast that you can listen to next, very much related to the conversation that Neil and I have just had. So head on over to obandco.uk/286 and enjoy finding out more about the evolution of department stores. And in the meantime, thanks so much for tuning in, and I look forward to joining you once again for another episode of the Retail Transformation Show very, very soon. Bye for now.